They assemble at night, each one having prepared as diligently as possible to the time given to them before the witching hour, the hour of reckoning, the time when they begin outdoor cartoon television. Stray Cast is on the air.
Outside my window, there's a whole lot of trouble brewing. And that's the cotton seeds. The cotton seeds are everywhere. They're driving me mad.
Yeah.
They're driving me crazy.
Yeah.
I can't get them out of my reel. It's nuts. But you know what? I got the bass monkey on my back bad. It's bad. It's so bad. But I can never stop fishing, no matter what. No matter what, I'm always bass fishing. I'm your host, Pat Renwick, and it is time again. Odin, your son has returned home to Asgard for Stray Cast Outdoor Cartoon Television. The extra crispy version of a bass fishing talk show is live right now on StrayCast.net and the Bookface Stray Cast. Dude, it's going to be phenomenal again. I am so excited. We had a little break. We had a little rest, a little hiatus, and now we are back. The Bassin Madness continues. It continues right here, right now. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going in reverse order tonight. I'm skipping around the horn, and I want to tell you, this guy, are you the hardest working producer in show in bass business? Are you harder working than Brian the Carpenter?
I'll answer for him, yes.
Him and Brian. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Bass Fishing Ginger Ninja. This guy, right there. This guy, Gwendolina and Serafina's dad, Andrew Ellenberger. Yeah, whoa,
hey.
They stopped suddenly.
Abrupt.
Today's show was filmed before a live studio audience, by the way. Just like the Jeffersons. Do you remember that show?
Yep.
I'm going to walk out of here like George Jefferson after this. Get the hell out of here. Our social media guy. The guy that does it all, he get ready and field your questions for our guests tonight. J.P. Hi.
Yo. I didn't see the Red Bull tonight.
I slammed it.
Is this just natural?
Slammed it.
Okay.
I slammed the Red Bull. That's JP Hyze, the hip-hop fisherman. This guy over here with a purple umbrella and a 50-cent hat.
Yes.
$4. Ladies and gentlemen, this is my drummer buddy who also bass fishes. This is Ryan Popcorn
Whitaker.
Hello. Whitaker. Yeah, hey now. That was a David
Letterman. Got that ready.
That was a Letterman kind of thing you did. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that right there. Yeah. Hey, another big show tonight. I'm really excited about our first guest, and I have not interviewed our first guest since the Bass Buzz radio days, but I am super stoked to welcome Randy Blockett to the Stray Cast Outdoor Cartoon Television Madness tonight. Randy Blockett's coming up at 7:10. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And then our old buddy, just a bass fishing superstar. He's blossomed into quite a bass and rock star.
Girl, you'll be a woman soon.
But he did fire me as his manager, and he's coming on at 7:40. The icon, Brandon Palahniuk. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. The great Brandino. He knows magic. Brandon knows magic. He's going to do magic tricks for us tonight on the Skype machine. Ryan, we got a big event coming up for those watching in the local area. If you're watching us like in Alabama, this is not going to do you any good. or Texarkana,
Texas.
Unless
you want to drive up. It's going to be big.
You can come on down. But if you're in the Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland area, there's a great thing going on, and the old Poppy Sox is going to tell us about it. What's going on, Ryan?
Saturday, June 17th, the Munster Volunteer Firefighters are having their fishing derby. It's going to start at 8 a.m. and end at 12 noon. It's $10 per person, $20 per family. Prizes will be awarded for largest fish of each species, and all Indiana DNR fishing regulations apply. Don't forget that.
They all apply. Yeah, apply stuff.
Sponsored by Cabela's.
Sponsored by Cabela's
and Stray Cats.
And the Stray Cats Outdoor Cartoon Television Show. And again, a real good cause. Bring the kids out. Take them fishing. Introduce them to fishing, because that's the deal. Like Michael Jackson said, I believe that children are our future.
Yeah.
Was that inappropriate?
He was talking about fishing.
Yes. That was very inappropriate. But hey, Stray Cast Outdoor Cartoon Television is happening now. Put the power poles down. Don't go anywhere. When we get back, it's Randy Block right here, right now, live.
Quality, dependability, consistency, and fish catching performance is what separates a War Eagle spinnerbait from the pack. Hand-assembled, inspected, and tested in Rogers, Arkansas, War Eagle lures are the choice of Mike McClellan, Andy Morgan, Edwin Evers, and you, the serious bass angler. War Eagle lures, when you absolutely have to catch fish. Find War Eagle lures at your local tackle store or visit WarEagleLures.com today. PH Custom Lures by Phil Hunt are quickly becoming the most sought-after custom balsa baits in the industry, from the Little Hunter to the Squeaky Pea. These baits are pure quality, handcrafted, hand-carved, and hand-painted. But most importantly, they flat-out catch fish. PH Custom Lures has a bait for any situation in a magnitude of colors. Check out the Old School, Straighter, and PH Custom series at phcustomlures.com. That's phcustomlures.com.
Welcome back to Stray Cast Outdoor Cartoon Television. I'm your host, Pat Renwick. This is Ryan Popcorn Whitaker right here. And I want to tell you right now, I am extremely honored to bring this dude back to the Bassin Madness. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a loud Bassin round of applause for Randy Blockett. Yeah! Woo! What's up, Randy?
I'm with my old man.
Good, man. How are you? I can't see your face, Randy. It's kind of shadowy.
Let me see if I can position this here a little bit better. I'm out in the garage working on tackle and getting relief for Potomac River tomorrow.
Oh, I see.
Is that better?
Oh, there you are. Hi, Randy. Hi, give me an internet high five now, Randy.
Hey.
You know, if I was there right now, you and I could practice karate in your garage right now.
It's been a while, but yeah, we could do that.
Dude, it's good to see you, man. It has been a while, dude.
When was it? It's been 10 years, maybe?
No, not that long. I mean, maybe 6 years or something. Almost a decade, but not quite a decade.
It just creeps up, man.
I'm telling you, we keep getting older, but our minds get younger.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying, Randy?
Yeah.
It's great to see you, man. And I'll tell you, I'm going to go back here a little bit. I'm going to tell you about the first time that, and again, this always sounds creepy when I say this stuff to you guys, but the first time that that I got a look at Randy Blockett, I think I read about you in the Bass Wars book. Like, is that, like, how, that's like, I think I was like a senior in high school or something.
That was 1986. That was my first season ever.
Yes. And I mean, I remember, like, I'm like, this dude is cool. I like this guy. He's good. You worked your way into it. You know, you didn't have the old spoon-fed, silver spoon, get into bassin' kind of deal.
I had the lawnmower to pay the entry fee and gas money deal going.
Yeah, you worked your ass off to get in there, and then boom, first year, qualify for the BMC, dude. Out of the gates.
That was such a freak deal, because that season, I never lost one single bass all year long, and I made the classic by like 6 ounces or something. And I look back at that, you know, I lose a bass like every day now, but that I didn't lose one the entire season. So it's almost like the universe just put some stuff in motion, and that was meant to happen, man.
Got to start throwing mono again.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
The bass gods were smiling upon you.
Yeah, there was something at work there that I can't explain. That was above and beyond anything that I've seen ever since then.
I mean, I must tell you, and I mean this most sincerely, you are one of my flipping heroes, dude. You're one of my flipping heroes. And
my favorite way to catch them.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's like going back, you know, of course everybody loves the Brouwer flip and the Klein flip, but there's just something certain that you see when you know a badass flipper. And the way that you do it, dude. And again, I'm kissing your ass right now. But you are a phenomenal flipper, dude.
You got to get the bite, and you know you can worry about getting them out after you get the bite. But until you get the bite, you can't get them out. So I've never let that stop me. Interesting story about how I learned to flip. I was down. You know, my mom and dad had a trailer house at Grand Lake when I was a kid growing up, and I was down there. This has been back in the early 80s, and there was a tournament down there, and this one guy named Terry Thomas, who's like a local legend around here in Missouri, he came in with like 28 pounds of fish at Grand Lake.
Nice.
I'd been out that day, and I caught like one 12-incher, and I said, man, how in the world did you catch 28 pounds? And he said, flipping, and I'd never even heard what that was. He said, yeah, you can come out with me tomorrow, and I'll show you. There's another tournament. We'll just get in a buddy tournament. We went out there and caught 27 pounds of fish. I didn't catch anything. But that day on the water with him, that's where I learned how to flip way up over those willows, getting them, you know, where other people won't cast to. And I've made a lot of money off that since.
Heck yeah. And you can tell a good flipper. Some people, when they flip, for lack of a better explanation, are very awkward. You know what I'm saying? There's a fluid panther-like motion to a good flipper. You know what I'm saying?
You can flipping. I tell everybody, flipping is an art form like anything else, because I can watch somebody fish from across a cove, and I can watch them make one flip, and I can tell how good of an angler they are, because there's so much that goes with it. It's boat positioning, it's rhythm, it's flow, it's posture. It's just everything has to go and be perfect in order to make that look artistic, and that's what I've always tried to do, try to make it, you know, look artistic.
Yeah, and
if you can't tell where the bait landed, they're usually pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like a Greg Louganis dive. No splash.
Exactly. But yeah. Don't hit your head on the bass boat on the way out.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. I talked to Gary Klein once, and he told me, Pat, if you're flipping and you're fishing with another angler and they're catching fish behind you, you're doing something wrong. Do you agree with that?
It depends if everybody's using the same bait. But most of the time, a flip and bite, there's a lot of variables that will generate the strike. The angle's one, and where you put the bait is important. But it can be something as simple as rate of fall, line size, lure color, lure profile. There's a lot of stuff that add up to it. And in order to maximize your water, you have to have all that come together. You have to have the right angle. You have to know where to put that bait. You have to know how to work that bait once it gets in there. Sometimes they want it, you know, a fast fall. Sometimes they want it sitting dead on the bottom. Sometimes they want a slow fall. Sometimes they want a green pumpkin at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and a black and blue at 9 o'clock in the morning. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, and it's just a guessing game until you really figure it out and isolate it.
It's crazy. And you brought up boat positioning and flipping, and I think that that's something that so many anglers overlook. And when I think about it, Randy, it's when we're in a boat and we're up close and personal with our green buddies, okay? Our boat is displacing water, correct? Are you with me?
Yeah.
It's displacing water. And I see a lot of anglers keeping their boat where it's actually – and now I believe in getting right up on the fish. I do it, okay? I do it all the time when I can. When I can get up close on them, I'm going to do it every time. But I see a lot of people that – they're making, instead of making flips slightly ahead of the boat, they're making flips directly in front of the boat where the water has already pushed. Is that a bearing factor on the success of flipping whatsoever?
I think it's one of the factors, but I think it's like anything else. It's not everything. I mean, there's when you're approaching a piece of cover, I mean, you have to calculate the wind, the current, the size of the boat you have, and how much momentum that boat carries with the thrust you have on your trolling motor. And once you get good at it, you can come into a piece of cover at the right speed and the right angle. And what you said, definitely, you know, I think you know, can play a part at some time, but I think it's just part of the overall puzzle.
Okay.
And it's and like I said, there's, and you can slop through an area and catch fish. I mean, you don't have to be completely 100% efficient, but tournament fishing is all about maximizing what you have, your water, the area you're fishing, everything. And that's when you do well, is when you got all that dialed in.
Absolutely it is, man. And I'm going to go back through a few Randy Blockett flipping history moments here, okay? And you and I have had this discussion before, but refresh my memory and tell me what derbies these were. I remember you getting back into a little creek and flipping, like everybody else that was flipping was using the big weight, big jig, and you made the decision to downsize to a little bitty ringworm. Mm-hmm. And a little bitty weight, still on the man tackle, but yeah, but flipping that thing into some gnarly stuff, man. Like, how did you come about that decision, Randy?
Well, that was the tournament I won in Alabama at the Mobile Delta, and those, I had caught most of those fish leading up to that day, fishing a big jig, a big 3/4 ounce full size jig, the big zooms, big solid chunk on it, and I was committed to this creek. It was a small creek. There was a lot of cover in it, and I was working at a snail's pace because it wasn't a lot of water, and I was super quiet. I had my electronics off, everything like that, and I'd fished that creek for 2 days with that jig and caught the fish that I'd caught, but it was getting tougher and tougher to get by. So that first morning, I went through there, and I caught one on a jig. I made a pass through my whole area and didn't have a bite, and I said, you know, I just got to give them a different look. And that's when I downsized to a little, you know, 4-inch ringworm and wound up, you know, catching the fish I needed to win that day. But that's the big key that I found in flipping is, gone are the days when, you know, back when, like when you and I were talking about back in the 80s, you could have a 1/2 ounce black and blue jig with a black and blue pork frog and 30-pound high visibility line. And you have one rod out and that's all you'd fish all day long. But now, these fish are so conditioned, they're so smart that I'll have, if I'm committed to flipping and that's all I'm going to do, I may have 7 or 8 flipping sticks out with the finesse stuff. I'll have a couple little finessey things. I'll have the big bulky jigs on. I'll have different profiles and it's basically just give them a different look. I mean, most all the tournaments that I've placed high in or won, they've come off flipping. That is, they've come off of one area, one stretch that I just slowed down and I did not leave a stone unturned. I fished every inch of it. I rotated baits, I rotated colors. Again, it's about maximizing your water, you know, with your things you can control.
Say you're on a lay down. You're back in the creek on this lay down and you just know it has fish on it, Randy. You just got this. You got that funny feeling, you know. How long do you spend on that lay down or that, let's call it any piece of cover, and how long do you spend on it and how often do you rotate baits on it before you're like, I'm kicking the dead horse, I'm out of here?
Yeah. That was sort of like the Bassmaster Classic in 98 that, you know, I finished third behind Brower and Cochran and had the fish on to win that classic, and that was exactly what it was. Isolated wood, isolated lay downs, where you had to make multiple presentations to get the bite. And normally you're normally expecting to catch the fish on the first cast once you get it in the sweet spot. And if you don't do that and you know there's a fish there, you caught fish there the day before, it's set up perfect, you got the right cover, you got the right, everything's just right about it, I'll maybe make, you know, 10 or 12 flips around, say, a log that's 10 feet long, different angle, I'll come off the end, I'll start on the sides. Then if I'm really thinking there's one there, I may switch up flipping baits, rotate that up a little bit. And then if I still don't got a bite, I'll usually run a moving bait by through there, like a crankbait, spinnerbait, chatterbait, something like that, to try to generate more of a reaction strike other than a feeding strike. But that's my favorite way to fish. If I had one way to fish, it would be isolated cover with a flipping stick in my hand, because I understand the personality of those fish, what you need to do to get them to bite. But we don't get that situation very often.
Yeah.
There's like maybe one tournament out of every 3 or 4 years we'll get that situation, you know, where you can fish like that.
And it used to be more often. And it is because you feel these fish are conditioned?
Well, it's a combination. I mean, we fish a lot of different lakes this time. We've fished a lot of different lakes, than we normally used to, and we stay basically from that from that January to June time frame. And a lot of the water that I'm talking about like that, it's prime in the fall time and early winter, like from that August to November period. And back when I was fishing the Bassmaster circuit, we fished, that's when we fished. Our season started in August or September, and half of it was in the fall and half of it was in the spring. But we don't have the opportunity for those fall, those mid to late fall tournaments anymore when that type of fishing excelled. That's why, you know, like Rick Klun's a prime example. Klun and David Fritz, those guys used to, they used to get out to such a big lead in Angler of the Year in those fall tournaments. And after that quit and it was a spring tournament, a lot of those guys that were really good at fall fishing sort of struggled when the new schedules came out about 10 years ago.
I mean, I noticed. I think a lot of us did.
A
lot of us did. There's a circle of angling that we progress in as anglers. And we start off like sponges. Okay? We start off absorbing every bit of information that we can possibly get, Randy. And then there's another part of the circle, the evolution of an angler. And I'm getting all Rick Klun on you right now, but
it's, okay.
But I mean, there is a time, I'm going to start doing Indian chants in a moment.
Okay.
But there's a time when we need to give back. We have to give back as anglers. And I remember Rick Klun saying this, and I know that you subscribe to this principle, and that's why I'm bringing it up, Randy. It's a lot of times, if you don't giveth, it is taken away.
Right.
Are you speaking my language right now?
No, that's how the universe works. I mean, it's a cycle. It's all about balance. And, you know, you get what you give. I agree with that 100%.
It's like
especially in tournaments.
It's like the Beatles. That's the love you take is equal to the love you make.
That's right. Absolutely. And there's, you know, tournament fishing like that, there's a fine line balance between that because, you know, I love to share information with people that are eager to learn and they're really motivated, particularly if I get somebody like that's, say, 15 to 20 years old that is really hungry to learn, because I love to help those type of people out because I remember what that was like at their age. You're young, you're full of enthusiasm, the world's in front of you, you just discovered fishing, it makes you feel alive. And, you know, I really try to, if I see somebody that comes up to me that wants to learn at that age, I really go out of my way to try to help them out.
We have to, because none of us would be where we are if people hadn't taken us under their wings as anglers.
Yeah.
It really is. And again, I don't mean this to come off the wrong way, but it's all part of giving back, because it may be frustrating to take an angler out that can't cast. Or that you're having to bring the boat into the trees all the time to get the bait. But it is all part of the evolutionary process. And it's something that is crucial to the continuation of the sport. I mean,
as I get older as an angler, that's one of the satisfying things about the sport is I'm getting now to a point in my career where I really enjoy sharing the knowledge and information that I've gained to people that want that information. I don't really have any desire to share it with somebody that doesn't want it, that doesn't understand what that means and what you had to go through to attain that knowledge. But when I get somebody that appreciates that and is sincere, there's nothing more satisfying than sitting down and teaching them and show them how to do something and then having them add their own unique creative twist to what I'm teaching them. Because, you know, every generation, not just fishing, but everybody, but particularly in fishing, every generation is better than the last. I mean, you can take right now, you can take like the average co-angler on the FLW Tour, and if you put them on the Bassmaster circuit back in 1980, they'd probably win Angler of the Year.
Right.
That's how far we've came as far as the skill level. It grows at a phenomenal rate right now, and it's hard for anybody to keep up with it. It is. I don't care who you are, what's going on. It just accelerates so fast right now that it just amazes me every tournament.
Go ahead, Ray.
You touched on one thing that I think is really important there is putting your own spin on it. I see a lot of guys going out trying to just completely copy what you showed them or whatever. And then I feel like you have to find your own way to do it. Like, you can show somebody something, but it doesn't always work for the other guy.
Yeah.
You have to find their own way to do it.
I mean, the big realization I've came to the last couple of years, not very long ago, just the last year or two, is that a creative mind, an open mind, is more valuable than experience in fishing. It really is, because I fish with these co-anglers that do stuff that I would never even think about trying, and they catch fish behind me doing it. And I probably did that back too when I was 22 years old. So every one of us out there, all the veterans out there, have got their butts kicked by, you know, people that have come along and tried techniques that we never would have thought of. And that's how it works. That's how it worked when I was 20 years old. And these guys that are 20 years old now, in 30 years, they'll be getting their butts kicked by somebody else that comes along with a new twist.
Yeah. It's the evolution, man. It's doing the evolution. And technology plays a huge role. I mean, well, I've had this conversation with Zona and Kumar and many guys many times that, like, we were the kids that were waiting at our mailbox for the Bassmaster magazine.
Right.
You know, and now all you got to do is just boop, click, social media, boop, click, YouTube, boom, it's right there. Now you know what's going on, you know?
You can't believe it. You can learn more in 1 hour, YouTube and videos, YouTube and tournament videos, than it took me 10 years. In 1 hour, you can learn more than that. It's unbelievable, the information that's available out there. And that's why the gap in the skill level gap is so narrow right now. I mean, it's I don't care if it's the Elite Series, if it's the FLW Tour, co-anglers, guys starting out, veterans. There is such a fine line between having a really good tournament and not even making a check. It comes down to one bite or one cast. It's just, and it's like that in every sport. I mean, any sport that you have is like that, but in fishing more than anything.
Do you think that you can learn too much, too fast?
I think your mind can get in the way of you just staying open-minded and having a good time.
That's what happened to
Ryan. And just the best tournaments are the ones where you go out there and you're not in a hurry. You found your pace. You found your groove. If you want to sit down for 10 minutes and tie up a jig, you don't get rushed around in it. That's when you're the most dangerous as an angler. When you're out there rushing around and you're making fast casts and you've got the trolling motor on too high of a speed, that's when you're not catching them. But if you're not catching them, it's hard to slow down. So that's why, and just another reason, that's why I say tournament fishing is the most difficult sport in the world. There's just so much to it.
Fish with confidence.
It's mind-boggling, tournament bass fishing. That's why I don't fish tournaments anymore, Randy. I just get up and go when I want and come home when I want, and it's too much pressure for me. It's too much pressure.
Yeah, there's a lot of people feel like that after a while. It's just the intensity of it's not for everybody. It's like it's an intense sport at this level. It is, because you got a lot riding on it. It's not just catching fish. You're paying bills. You got people counting on you. Sponsor obligations, you know, there's a lot going on with it.
Well, and this guy is intense when we're fun fishing at noon. I can't even imagine tournament mode.
Yes.
It would just be a sword fight.
I don't know. I just like to catch him. I got it bad. I mean, I got it bad, Randy. I can't stop bass fishing. And there's one thing that amazes me about bass fishing. It's like I don't think there's anything on earth where time goes by as quickly as it does as when you're on the water. Is that the same way for like a golfer or something? Is like, I mean, I don't know, but I know it's like, oh, wow, 9 hours has gone by.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in tournaments, it's like it goes both ways. I've seen times where if you catch a big bag of fish in the first hour, the rest of that day drags. But if you're not catching them or if you've got something figured out and you just need the time to find that cover, it goes by so quick. But yeah, it's like Einstein said, time is so relative. You know, it's just, it's, unless you've been out there in that environment, it's hard to comprehend what you're saying there.
That is the first Einstein reference on Straight Cast.
Yes, that's
congratulations.
How about a studio audience round of applause for the first Einstein reference ever on a bass fishing talk show? History made by Randy Blockett right there. That was phenomenal. Hey, Randy, when was the best time in history to be a professional bass angler? Was that then or now or in between?
To me, the golden age of bass fishing, and I hope we get back to there at some point, but the golden age for tournament bass fishing was like 1999 to 2004. And that's when FLW was really growing super hard. ESPN was involved with Bassmasters. You had a lot of new energy in that.
And Jerry knocked it out. McInnes knocked it out at that time.
It was unbelievable. For those people that were there during that time, the energy and the excitement in this industry with the anglers, the sponsors, the fans was unbelievable. And that carried over up until like when they first had the Bass E50s, in the mid, I think it was 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. There was so much enthusiasm for the sport on so many levels. There was a lot of money in it. A lot of pros were making a lot of money fishing through sponsors. The purses were bigger than they've ever been. It was the best time to be a pro fisherman. Obviously, the recession of 2008 put all that to a grinding halt. We're starting to come back a little bit now, but I don't know if we'll ever reach that level where the potential that existed during that time frame that I think was sort of unrealized. It's never manifested since then.
There's like a tier of sponsorships, isn't there? It's like it almost seems. I don't know if it's performance based as much anymore or where it is, but it's like you're either here or you're here.
Well, social media has changed everything because you can take somebody, you can take some 20-year-old kid that's a YouTuber. Doesn't have any tournament experience, and he can go out and he can create YouTube videos. He can fish. He can put all this stuff over the social media. He can promote his page. He can get tens of thousands of followers, and he is actually more valuable to a sponsor as far as creating impressions for that product than somebody that's won the Bassmasters Classic a couple times that is not like that. So it's all about creating impressions. It's about building brand name and social media. Nothing can compete with social media with that. I don't care how good you are, how many titles you have, how much money you've won. You simply cannot expose a product to as many people as social media can. And that's changed everything. I mean, it really has.
I'm not sure I like that, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not saying I do either. That's just the reality of the situation. Because you can have... Here's a prime example. There's a lot of young YouTubers in California that go out to some of those California lakes and catch these giant 12, 15, 18-pound bass on huge swim baits, and they're knocking down hundreds of thousands of views. So when you're knocking down if you see a 15-pound bass and there's this big mega bass swim bait hanging out of its mouth, that is powerful.
Yeah.
As far as being able to directly say that this is going to generate sales for a company, there's no way that can come. Somebody that goes out and wins a tournament or wins the Bassmaster Classic and endorses a product simply cannot compete with that. So that's changed the whole face of our sport from the marketing standpoint. And I think the ideal situation is to have a combination of both. You have to have a strong social media presence. You have to have, you know, some type of a name and, you know, recognition to draw some credibility to that. I think that's when that makes the ultimate marketing person fishing now. But there's a lot of people right now that are making a lot more money than pro anglers are. They're just making YouTube videos and capitalizing on that. They figured it out. I hear about it all day. It's a different world for sure.
It is. And you know, I don't know. It's good and bad. I have mixed emotions about it because social media helps us. Social media helps you. But it's kind of like the old adage, let the music do the talking. You know what I'm saying? I think it's forgotten.
Yeah, that's not how it goes anymore. I mean, it's really not. I mean, it's changing even so rapidly right now. I mean, it's just there are more people wanting to be pros. There's more people fishing. There's more opportunities to make money in the sport through non-tournament avenues. It's just a matter of capitalizing those, using your creativity, being tech savvy. And, you know, if you're if you're a good angler, if you're tech savvy, if you have a good on-camera presence, I mean, you can go a long way in the sport without even fishing tournaments. You can, if that's your passion, that's great. You know, some people, you know, myself, I'm passionate about tournament fishing. I love tournament fishing. You know, I hate it at the same time. I love it and I hate it. And that's sort of the same with the YouTubers. I mean,
yeah, we are starting to see some people put all that together too.
We just got that comment. Palahniuk's good at both.
Yeah, Palahniuk is doing well in tournaments and producing content daily.
He's a prime example. I mean, Brandon's a prime example of somebody that has maximized both ends of it. I mean, he's like, he would be, you know, the prime role model for what I just talked about as far as having that balance, that combination of both. It's rare. It's not easy to do. It takes a lot of work. I mean, somebody that has a strong social media presence and puts all this effort into generating content, editing it, that takes a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't think he sleeps much.
Yeah. And you know, I was talking to Brandon the other day, and I hope that you know that you are actually one of his heroes. He says he doesn't know you, but you're one of his heroes. He's watched you for years.
I appreciate that. I followed him since he started out, ever since he got second down at the Classic on my home lake at Grand, and he's got it going on, man. He's the future of the sport. You know, I think a lot of anglers, you know, want to emulate, you know, how he goes about the sport and the success he's had. He's smart, he's passionate, he speaks well, he's a good looking guy. I mean, he's got the whole package, and you know, he's what sponsors are looking for, and you know, he's a great role model for the sport. He is.
He is absolutely, and we're looking forward to having him next. Hey Ryan, I want to talk to Randy about that.
You want to talk about some Megabass for a second?
Yeah, that Megabass jerkbait. What the heck?
Yeah,
what
we got. There's something. It's not a jerkbait, but you're using it as a jerkbait.
Yeah, it's not a 110. It was something else. I saw you just absolutely spanking them on.
Is it a flap slap? Is it a what? It's a short bait.
It's a little.
Hold on 1 second. Just a second.
Okay.
All right. He's got one.
Ladies and gentlemen, Randy Blockett has gone to bring up mystery bait.
Is it that trick darter? Okay.
I don't know.
This is how much I like flap slaps.
Oh!
Love them here.
Whoa!
There's a couple.
My gosh. Yeah.
But, right there, you can see it. Flap slap, that is one of my favorite Megabass baits of all time right there. It's a flat-sided crankbait. It's sort of like the old Speed Shad profile, but it's a lot more versatile. You can fish it like a crankbait. You can fish it like a jerkbait both. And it's just absolutely deadly in both the pre-spawn and during the middle of the summertime. Not a lot of people fish it, which if they did, they'd start using it a lot more.
and that's what, it wasn't like the Live X Marigay or the X80 trick darter that you were using like a jerk bait. I know it was a real little bait, man.
Yeah, I use that one called the Leviathan and the Revenge both. They've got, you know, so many different type of jerk baits. That's something for every situation.
Do you remember a Megabass color called the PMIL reaction?
Yes, I do. I don't think that I've used that one much. I sort of got my favorites, but everybody does.
I love it.
That flap slap? I haven't thrown it. Does that float? Or is it suspending? What does it do?
It depends on the hooks you use on it. If you use the stock hooks that come with it, it'll float up real slow. But I usually upgrade the hooks to, say, two number fours, and that'll sort of make the bait suspend a little bit. And a lot of times I'll even put, like, some suspend strips on it so I can sink it down and fish it deeper, like over deeper grass beds and stuff like that, off deep points in the wintertime around here.
I'm going flap slapping.
I'm gonna get some.
I'm going flap slapping. He's got me convinced.
Do they all have the different eyes? I notice one side has different eye than the other side.
Yeah. Some of them. Let me see if I can show you one. Some of them's got a straight eye, and then on the other side it has a down pointing eye.
What's the reason for that?
Let me show you this right here. To make it think they're winking at you?
Is it a birth defect?
It's a birth defect.
Can you guys see that eye right there?
Yes,
it's a walleye.
That's one side. And then there's the other side.
Totally different.
Like, you could see how he tricked out the paint.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I got see that. Fingernail polish. I've got like 10 bottles of fingernail polish in my boat. I put fingernail polish over a lot of stuff. But
oh, boy.
That's just, I don't know if that makes a difference, but that's just one of those attention to details that Megabass has. I mean, that's what makes those baits so awesome. It's just the incredible attention to detail about them.
Unbelievable.
I like the idea of having two different things on each side, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like it's like the mistake.
Throw it to the
color.
Right of the fish, he doesn't bite it. Maybe if you throw it to the left of him, he sees that eye.
I thought I had a special one like this.
Yeah, JP got all excited at the sports show. It's like, I got to put this on eBay. I'm going to get like $600 for this. It's got two different eyes.
I've even caught a ton of fish when I've caught so many fish on them at times. Sometimes the eyes would come off and still caught fish on them. So
don't matter.
Nothing matters.
The proof is in the pudding, Randy.
Easy meal.
Yeah.
That's what Bill Cosby said. Proof is in the pudding. It's right there. Randy, if you have something to say here to your fans, to your sponsors, but before we get out of here, go ahead, man. Now's the time. Give it to us.
I appreciate everybody that checks me out on social media, like we were talking about earlier. You know, I've got my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter account. You know, I appreciate all the interaction and the feedback I get from the fans. That means a lot to us because, you know, if it wasn't for the fans and the ability that we have to generate sales for our companies, none of us would be out here because, you know, if I didn't have the sponsor base that I had, I wouldn't be fishing. So I just really appreciate, you know, the support of fans, sponsors, everybody that goes with it.
And dude, we really appreciate your support and you coming on this show with us knuckleheads because it means a lot to us. Sincerely, man, we love you, dude. You're a phenomenal bass fisherman.
Well, it's great to hear from you guys again. And like I said, just appreciate the chance to come on.
Yeah, and I'm going to come by and we'll go fishing and we'll practice karate in the garage.
Come on down. Just come on down. I'm living in Springfield, Missouri now. Just, you know.
It's close to us. Yeah.
Married earlier this year. Got a baby. Actually, I got a baby on the way after Potomac, so we got a lot coming on.
Congratulations. Congrats. And do you ever like run into James Watson on the water? Do you ever hide from him?
I've seen him on the water a few times. He lives just down the road from here, so he sees every tournament.
You better stay far away from him. He's a bad influence. He's a bad
karate.
He's a bad influence. Hey, you know what? I just forgot something. It wouldn't be an interview if we didn't play a game show with Randy. We're gonna play. My producer's giving me the stink eye over
he's
here.
Very angry.
He's got like one eye like a flap slap, and then the other eye is like a 110, and that's how he's looking at me right now. But let's play a game show real quick. You ready, Randy?
Okay.
So before we get the hell out of here, let's do this. This is a little thing called the Bassin Match Game, okay? And we're gonna play this game here. I'm gonna give you a word or a phrase, and you relate it to bass fishing. Okay? Are you ready? How about a little game show music? Ah, yes. Welcome to the Bassin Match Game. I'm your host, Pat Renwick. Today, FLW Tour Pro and bass fishing legend Randy Bloggett joins us live. Randy, the word to you. Wait, hold on. That's for Brandon. The word for you is shuto-uki. Shuto-uki.
Shuto-uki. Japanese mega bass trip to Tokyo.
Okay, shuto-uko. But actually, that's the karate knife chop. That's the knife chop right there.
Is that the knockout?
That has been. I was in the tournament competition. That's been back in 1990. So I've forgotten a lot of that since then.
That's the shuto-uki, but I like your answer better anyway. Secret weapon. Secret weapon.
Flap slap.
The flap slap. There it is right there. Chickadee China, the chatter chicken.
Chatterbait with my favorite magic shad trailer.
He is speaking my language right there, right? He knows. Randy knows. It's right there. Fishing gypsy.
Shinfukai. And Miyu.
Okay. They're the fishing gypsies. I like that. Lord of the Bass. Lord of the Bass.
Steve Kennedy.
Steve Kennedy's the Lord of the Bass. Right there. And cuts like a knife.
Ranger Z521.
A Ranger Z521 cuts through the water just like a knife. I think that Randy won.
You won.
Congratulations. Yes. You won some replacement eyes for your flap slap. We're going to send you out a box of those. so you don't have to use new ones. Right there. Randy, thanks so much. That was for me, not you. That was for me. That was all selfish, I admit. But thank you so much for playing along, dude, and always a pleasure to have you on. Everybody, look up Randy Blockett on the Bookface and on Instagram and watch him on the Walmart FL – or not, well, I say that every time – on the FLW Tour. See, it's embedded in my head. That's what those advertisers did to me. On the FLW Tour, and best of luck on the Potomac River, Randy.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Randy Blockett right there. Hey, I'm Pat Renwick. This is Ryan Popcorn Whitaker. Put the power poles down when we come back. It's Kid Galahad, Brandon Palahniuk, right here on Straight Cast Outdoor Cartoon Television. Don't you go anywhere, please.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Dance.
No, just kidding. This is Pat. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Straight Cast on iTunes and leave a review. Tell us what you think. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening. Peace!